Blog Talk Radio. Good evening and welcome once again to Madame Perry Salon, the podcast that loves you. I am your hostess, your groove mistress, your spiritual advisor, and cruise director, Madame Perry, and I'm so happy to be back again. We've been so lucky to have so many fun people, interesting, exciting people, and on the show, and yeah, it's going to keep on going. If you were listening last week, I believe it was, or the week before, to Jeff Carlisi. Excuse me, you know, we had some really bad problems. Thanks to Joe Milliken and Kristen Lashley for calling in and taking over the interview questions for me, since I was having bad problems on this end. But Jeff said he would like to come back and do it over again. So, hey, that sounds good to me. And let's see. Oh, yeah, tomorrow night we have Doc Wheeler Stone. He is going to be at Wild Wild West Con next week. And, if you know me, that is to me the most wonderful time of the year is Wild Wild West Con. It's the steampunk convention in March in Tucson, Arizona, it takes place in the Old Town Tucson, which used to be a set for TV shows and movies, for Westerns, that is, and now it is it's a tourist attraction, but the Wild Wild West Con, Western Steampunk, takes over. Well, we don't take over. Other people can come in, too. They're not. They just can't attend our events, but we take over pretty much on that weekend, and I'm going to be there for the third year straight doing a presentation on podcasting. Plus, this year on Friday night, the first night of events, James Spring, who is the producer of Creative Play and Podcast Network, he and I with Madame Perry Salon are going to join forces and do a two-hour live broadcast from the first night with all the cool people coming. It's going to be out of sight and steamy. Outside. Oh, yes, Wheeler Stone is of Doc Stone. I called him Doc Wheeler. He's Doc Stone Studios. I posted his picture on Facebook. I say he looks like steampunk Blake Shelton to me. So anyway, he's going to be fun. That's tomorrow night. And then coming up in the next few weeks, I've got some more people who are going to be special guests. Paige Gardner. Oh, my gosh. If you could see the stuff Paige Gardner makes. And she's quite a popular guest at a lot of conventions because of the magnificent, just outrageous and gorgeous costumes she makes. And then I find out, watching a video about her, she doesn't even sew, but she was working years ago at Home Depot, and she would take some stuff they were throwing out, little scraps and things, and make the most magnificent costumes to where they, even though she's not there anymore, she has permission to raid their garbage anytime she wants. It is just fantastic. Okay. Also, my friend A.L. Walker, author of One Move, you should definitely get her book. She's appearing at almost every convention out west that there is. So look her up, A.L. Walker. And she's also listening and says hello, and she let me know that the audio was good. A.L. Walker, I love you. Thank you so much for helping me there. And, okay, so we've got more people, steampunk people coming in a few weeks up to March the 5th, which is when Wild Wild West Con is, March 5th through the 8th. I'm so excited. Anyway, but tonight, if you've seen some of my posts in the last few days or the last week, you know, this is going to be sizzling hot. I am so excited. This is going to be such a fun guest. I spoke to her a few weeks ago. I've watched some of her other interviews, and watched her YouTube channels and things. You're going to love this lady. If you don't already, if you know her, you probably do love her already. But she is an artist, activist, singer, writer, composer. And when I say musician and composer, I mean she's like real legit, fancy-trained composer, musician, feminist, yay, human rights activist, and she's a producer. She's created two stage musicals, a one-act opera, Requiem, songs, play, vocal exercise CD. I need to get that. Just all kinds of things. But she's also known as a sacred sex shaman. Yeah, and so please welcome this very special guest, Trish Causey. Trish, come on into the genie bottle here. Get comfy.
Hello, how are y'all doing? Thank you so much for having me on. I appreciate it.
I am thrilled, absolutely, to have you here. I knew as I was learning about your work, it was going to be fun. And the more I watched videos and talked to you, this is a night I've been looking forward to. So I don't know how you find the energy to do everything you do. I'm glad you're a feminist and an activist as well as an artist. And I read in your, I think it might have been on your website, that every original work you create addresses an issue pertinent to society, culture, or human rights. Have you always, did you grow up in an environment where it was important to pay attention to human rights, to society, to things going on around you?
Well, before anybody takes this the wrong way, just let me tell you, I love my home state, but I am from Mississippi, and so there are still some issues we need to work on, especially in terms of religious freedom and still working on issues in terms of sexual orientation, acceptance, and those kinds of things, because I'm not Christian. And so that's very taboo in the South even still. I started in the arts when I was 2, and I became an activist just out of happenstance when I was 13, because I was a freshman in Catholic schools, and my best friend was a sophomore, and she was Jewish. And so she would be tormented every single day by the kids, and the teachers wouldn't do anything. And so I went to the principal, and he was like, well, that's just kids being kids. Now run on along to class, Miss Causey. This is wrong. Because in my heart, even though I was made to be Catholic, in my heart I knew that I wasn't Christian. And so it terrified me if my mother found out, if other people found out. There's all this pressure to conform to various modes of societal dictates. And this is everywhere. This is not just the South. But, and so I became an activist then and there, although I didn't realize, I didn't know that was the word for it. But, so I've been in the arts since I was 2 and an activist since I was 13. And in terms of what, how I have the energy, because a lot of people mention that, like, how do you have the energy to do everything you do? And it's simply because this is what fuels me. I am a warrior fire spirit, and this is my gasoline. This is my fuel. This is what keeps me going. It keeps me up at night. But it's what this isn't work to me. This isn't work. I can't live my life without this, because I've tried. And when you live your life without your passions, your soul dies a little bit every single day. You just become miserable. And so I tried being normal, and it didn't work. So I've just decided I'll be me and see where that takes me.
Okay. I like something back that you said just a few seconds back, because it echoes something that I've been telling people recently. When you say, your soul dies a little bit when you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Say it again the way you said it, if you don't.
Your soul dies a little bit every day when you don't follow your passions, when you don't follow your raison d'etre, the reason you incarnated this lifetime, the reason why you were born, whatever your perspective of spirituality, past life, whatever. That if you don't follow your passions, you die a little bit every day. And, unfortunately, our society is not yet geared toward people following their passions, and so and being able to make a living from their passions.
Yeah,
that's what we're still working toward, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, but it's so important for you to follow your passions as much as you can.
Yeah, and I think that's what I've been saying recently. I didn't take it as broadly as you did, I don't think, but I said when people have, I believe, something that they is in their soul, something they have a love of, a desire to do, something that they really enjoy and feel strongly about, I always say if you don't do it, I think a little bit of your soul dies. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I appreciated that from you. You have, you're gorgeous. Okay, if you don't mind me saying that, I've seen your videos. I've heard you sing. You're gorgeous. There are some songs that you sung. I used to sing, I'll never sing again after hearing you. What is the, Jessica Rabbit song, is what everybody calls it, the Jessica Rabbit song. Get out of here and get me some money,
right,
too.
Yeah, which was first sung by Peggy Lee back in, was it 41 or something? I mean, yeah, that's an old song,
yeah,
but it made more famous to current mindset, yeah. Oh, but I love that song. I mean, that's just fun.
Oh, it is. It's a good one. So how often do you get to sing? I mean, you've worked all over. You've traveled and you've worked,
mm-hmm,
I think, you've gone far outside of Mississippi sing and he plays. And so
yeah,
how would you think,
yeah,
you started in show business 2 years old, but how did you get going? How were you able to follow your passion and travel and perform, right?
Well, when I was in high school, I actually started doing theater competitions, but I was doing them actually through community theater. And so it's funny you mentioned about singing all over. The furthest place I've traveled to perform was with a theatrical group, and that was in South Korea. That was still, to this day, that's a highlight of my life. So I just doing theater competitions and then performing, repertory theater at the time. Actually, my performing, I did have to, because when you're pregnant, they don't let you perform. The insurance, they won't let you get on a stage, you know. But when I found out I was pregnant with my daughter, that's when things shifted from performing Waka Waka Jazz Hands, you know, to, I still feel this need to be creative. How do I pursue being creative? And that's when I became more of a writing, which I've always done, and music composition, which I tried my hand out when I was about 18 for about 6 months, and then way too much work. I'm just going to sing on stage, and so that's what I started doing. Is I started working behind the scenes as a stage manager, production stage manager, because that was the only thing that paid. Performing on stage didn't pay, but working tech and running the show did pay, and that's how I was able to get a lot of experience, which helped me, because then I realized, wait a minute, I'm writing shows, I'm creating shows, because now I'm legit writing entire musicals. How do I get this on a stage if I'm, you know, I've been performing, but I don't know behind the scenes aspect of things. And so being a stage manager and production stage manager allowed me to see what all goes on behind the scenes, so I could then actually tailor some of my shows to what would need to happen in order for them to be realized on stage. And that led to kind of producing workshops of my music, et cetera, et cetera. And yeah, it's just, it just flows one thing to another. Eventually, if you stay in it long enough, you actually wind up doing a little bit of everything somewhere along the way, you know? I just had the best time learning. And, you know, I love learning. So, I will be a professional student all my days. So
I do too. I feel like if I'm not learning something new, I'm not knowledge or learning something new, or trying something new even. So yeah, I can see now where you say, you know, once you've worked on both sides of the stage, behind the scenes, or I probably overhead lights, whatever. Yeah, you do. I guess you do get a different, more like a 360 or whatever degree,
mm-hmm,
in vision and understanding of what makes some things work and not work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, exactly. It's just like, trust me, the first time that I stage managed the show that I've done since, I have never complained about a thing, ever, ever, ever. Once you know what actually goes on the production side of things to actually get to the point where actors are being hired or cast, or actors have even a rehearsal space to rehearse in, and you're not rehearsing in someone's backyard, that somebody is organizing an entire trip to go send an entire troop of theater people and our, you know, ton of set pieces, you know, across the pond the other way to Southeast Asia. I mean, it's just the logistics of everything. It just gives you a whole new appreciation for things, you know, just like you know, you doing this show. I mean, I've listened to radio shows my whole life, but wow. When I became a radio host and started my own talk show, I have a whole new appreciation for what goes into creating a show, you know? So,
same here. Yeah, everything I've learned, what I took, I had a TV show in the 80s and I had so many musicians on, but, you know, I became less critical when I began taking guitar lessons. After that, if anybody that could stand up and play, I just thought was great. So,
mm-hmm. Right?
And could remember to get that root note in there. So, yeah, after that, I was not so critical. And in fact, here's something that I think you might agree with. One musician, my teacher told me this, who was just magnificent, Angela Motter, and she said, when you get ready to play in front of somebody, don't play in front of your friends, family, whatever. She says, play in front of somebody who's playing is really good, who you think is a really, really, who you know is a good player, because other people will just see how you don't sound like the record. Whereas the really good player, the person who has had training and is good and goes out, will see how much you've learned.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing. Okay. Doing gigs is completely different than doing theater, and that was a huge learning curve for me because, singing in clubs, singing in sports bars, and singing in Irish pubs because I sing Irish music as well, and so it's a completely different animal, as we say here. And so you really start to take a lot of things. You appreciate things in a much different way. And to get up on stage, you know, I've never been scared to get on stage, but to get up on stage in a pub atmosphere where nobody was paying attention to me because they're doing their pub things, you know. It was a totally different experience, and that kind of situation, I would actually feel comfortable playing the piano on stage, which I refuse to usually. It's like I'll bring someone else in to play, you know, because I'm the singer, and that's all I want to do, because I'm also the manager, and I do the website, and I do all the promotions, and I do the arrangements of the songs and all that jazz. I just want to have somebody just, okay, at this point, just play the darn music, and I just want to sing. But it's really important for you to feel comfortable. And I don't know, it's live performing is incredible, but I don't know. I just, there's so many different variations of it that whatever you do, you can find a variation of that that suits you and that you can feel comfortable with, which I know is not what you were getting at, but I just wanted to throw that out there to anybody listening, you know, which goes back to your passion, you know, do what you love and find a way to make that happen for you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And by the way, my friend, who a fantastic performer, is listening tonight, and she's just saying, she's just messaging me saying, yeah, you're right. I'm right there with you gals. Yep. And her name is Kristen Lashley. If you ever get to see her, Kristen Lashley, she's fantastic, and she's a great performer and a sweetheart. In fact, she's one of the people that talked to me when my mic wasn't working, so she just called in and interviewed the guest. But you've worked with Blog Talk Radio, so you know it's a task.
Yeah.
It's a challenge. Okay. So let's what was the thing I saw? What doesn't kill me gives me a very dark but effective set of coping skills or revenge. But anyway,
yeah.
And you sing in how many languages? In Gaelic.
Well, again, I was forced to be Catholic when I was growing up, and to get away from my mother, who was always wanted to sit in the, you know, like toward the front, to get away from her, I joined the choir because I love singing. I've always loved music, and so I sang in the choir. So, of course, you're singing in Latin. But before that, I had started in ballet, which, of course, you learn French, piano, you learn Italian. And so then there was Catholic choir, which was ecclesiastical Latin, and then in ninth grade Catholic high school I took regular classical Latin, so then I was learning a little bit of both. That was taught by a Jesuit priest. Oh, I have stories. But then after that I took up legit singing lessons, and when you start out, at least back in the day, whenever you take quote-unquote voice lessons, it was always classical, and I was a coloratura soprano at the time. I couldn't yet belt. I hadn't mastered that technique yet, so I was still a very light soprano, and so that training is always, you're singing in Italian and German and French, so then the Latin and the Latin, and then from there I took Spanish, and one of my favorite, most favorite arias, the Bacianas Brasileiras number 5, is in Portuguese, and so, yeah, and then along the way, I started doing these Irish gigs. So that was like early years, but in the 2015, I started doing Irish gigs. So then I had to learn Gaelic, which I've always wanted to because I'm Irish. If you've seen my picture, I mean, it's pretty obvious that I'm a ginger from the Emerald Isle. They really cannot deny who I am, right? And so actually what I'm learning right now is because I'm getting even further into my studies, I'm now learning Sanskrit. So, I love language. I love sound. My hearing is my primary sense. And so anything that's musical, like language, I take to it very easily, very well, you know. And so that's one of my gifts. We all have gifts, and language and talking way too much just happens to be one of mine. So I love language.
I do too. I do too. I love trying to learn languages. Not very. I don't know. Probably couldn't sing in as many as you. You know, do a couple. But yeah, it just opens up. I think your. I don't know. Kind of opens up your spirit, and you reach some other audiences. And I went to an open mic with Piano Bar a couple of weeks ago, and all of a sudden everybody was getting up doing something in a different language. You know, the French or whatever. So. You know, I got it.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I just said, hey, you know, I think what was the guy's name? Marciano. Marciano, hey, you brought in the international theme. I just got to try to do my best to keep up. But
that's awesome.
If you're listening to us live, I want you to know my guest is Trish Causey, if you've just tuned in. And if you want to call in and talk to us, the number is 646-716-9922. It is a toll-free call in the continental U.S., but for the people who can't call in because they're like some of my friends that listen, they're at jobs where they listen, but they can't always make a phone call, or your place where you got to be very quiet, you can always send a message to me through either Madam Perry Salon or Jennifer Mott at Perry on Facebook, and I will definitely share your question or comment with Trish Causey. Now, Trish, let's talk about sex.
Oh, girl, yes, let's do that. Enough of all that legit high upstanding stuff. Let's get to the good stuff.
Let's talk about sex, baby. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Indeed.
I've seen things on your website, not just comments or things or read in your book, but I have seen, read, and I think I've even seen merch, even on Google Images and stuff, with things like Foreskin Matters, Vagina Warrior, Free the Nipples.
Yes.
Yes, baby, yes. Let's Yes. Let's not hide the foreskin. Let's talk about it.
Hell yeah, that's right, girl.
Where did you get to this part? How did you become a sex shaman?
Well, the word shaman actually is a Chinese word, and it was the Chinese trying to describe what the Buddhists call themselves, using a Sanskrit word, actually. So it always goes back to Sanskrit and Tantra, doesn't it? For me, anyway. The shaman is someone who studies ritual is very important to a shaman, but also about healing and transformation. And it's usually transformation it's usually a spiritual transformation that you then bring into the physical, or you hold space for transformation in the physical. So that's what a true shaman is. And so what I try to do as a sacred sex shaman is I am trying to bring love and consciousness to sex and relationships. And in fact, I just today launched my new page about my sacred sex certified practitioner course that I am launching. So all of your listeners need to take it. It's on the front page of my website, trishcology.com. But anyway, with sacred sex, unfortunately, like a lot of people, I've experienced numerous instances of sexual abuse and sexual trauma, and never really knew what to do because I never told anybody. There's so much shame around being victimized, because even you feel like a victim the whole time, and then there's blame and shame and all of that, and guilt and fear. And so I had all of that for all these years, and without even meaning to, pursuing Tantra, just wanting to have easier orgasms, I found myself healing these deep, deep traumatic wounds. And along the way, I can actually say I am completely healed of all sexual trauma. And I never, ever expected to be, if you want to say, trauma-free like that, because some of this trauma started when I was a child. And so it just became... it's part of my soul mission. It's part of my life purpose to help other people. And so that's what I try to do by the blog posts, my radio show, my YouTube channel, my musical. I've even written a song called Foreskin. It's like an EDM, a kind of a dance kind of thing that I'm going to release later this year to bring awareness to that aspect of things. But as a sacred sex shaman, it really is about understanding a person's body autonomy, your right to your body. It's yours, and that includes the right for boys to keep their foreskin when they are born. At least that's the way it does. It's usually when it's done here in this country, the act of circumcision. But just to be able to love sex, to love being sexual and sensual, when you have been traumatized, that gets taken away from you. And so the shamanic part of this is to go deep within, to remember who you are, that part of you that is so beautiful and wonderful, and to get rid of, divest yourself of all of this, the shame, blame, guilt, fear that our toxic society tries to put onto women and men who are sexually abused, that you're weak, you're stupid, you were gullible, et cetera, et cetera. So it's just about healing and transformation, and that's what I try to do with my program, AWESOME, which stands for Awakening Energy and Sound Orgasm Meditation, which is on special right now. And then my brand new Sacred Sex Certified Practitioner course is to help people really anchor this into their own lives, or to help them in their coaching business if they're a coach, like I'm a coach. Just to really facilitate healing yourself so that you can then turn around and help others heal. And that's what it's all about for me. And so I don't know if the original question was how I got into – no, it wasn't. It wasn't about how I became an activist. It was how I became a sacred sex shaman. It's just healing, my own healing. and then realizing that this is part of my life's journey is to help others heal.
You know, I was so glad that you didn't answer my question directly, because everything you just said matters to me, and matters to, I'm sure, millions of people. And it's, I've never heard anyone else address it. And as we say, when somebody has been had sexual trauma or been victimized sexually, especially if they're a child, or any time, but I think there's a different thing with childhood. You don't enjoy sex. You think something's wrong with you. You think you caused the problem. You think, you know, or all the things that we think about ourselves. And it's not us, you know. We didn't cause it. I was talking recently to somebody about how some, you know, you've read some women will gain weight as a protection.
Oh, this is exactly what I did. But what I wanted to just before we go on, because you know I'm a blabbermouth too. Is that before we move on, what you just said, something that was so important, and I just want to make sure that we don't lose it in all of this fun that we're having, is that the sexual trauma that we experience as children, as well as the trauma later, is that people don't realize that according to the RAIN Institute. Over 85% of sexual abuse or sexual traumatic experiences are caused by people we know. They're in our immediate family and friends circle, our network of people. And so what happens when you are a child and you're victimized is that someone who has authority over you or some kind of position of control over you, you internalize that. And then you bring that into your adulthood years, and it just perpetuates this cycle of never being good enough, never feeling good enough. You internalize this betrayal, and it is a lot to work through. And for anyone who has tried to do their healing and they can't or they feel like they can't do it, that is totally okay. You are fine. Mm-hmm. No one says you have to heal anything. Healing, that's a paradigm. And if you're not ready, that is okay. You are perfectly fine the way you are. And if and when you want to start to work through some of this, then getting a coach is like myself or someone else, you know, that's open to you. But the emotional, the psychological, and spiritual devastation of sexual abuse can never be overstated, in my opinion. And so you touched on that, and so I just wanted to reiterate that.
Okay. And if you call yourself a blabbermouth, you're the most enchanting blabbermouth I've ever met. So when, by the way, we had a caller that was just here for a brief moment, and then they left, and they haven't, if you're listening, they have an 864 area code, please call back. You were just there for a minute and gone. And so, please call. Number is 646-716-9922, or send me a message with the question for Trish Causey. So, if someone comes to, okay, say this the practitioner course you've got coming up, what will people get? Why do people come, and what will they get out of it?
Well, again, my mission is to help people bring love and consciousness back to their sex and relationships. You know, I think that we've all done the hookups and the one night stands, and we've had the fun and the flings or even the affairs. And so it's humanity is waking up as a whole. And so what happens is that, okay, we have all of this, we have this past, right? And we kind of know we don't want to bring that kind of behavior or those habits into our future. We want to make a change. We want to transform. But people don't have the skills. You certainly don't see good representations of healthy relationships on reality TV or social media, or, you know, it's very hard to know How do you travel that bridge from what we see in the 3D, as we call it, to a relationship that is anchored in the 5D, the fifth dimension, which is all about unconditional love and compassion and happiness and just true joy? And so that's what I want to do with this course. And so it is, I am not teaching Tantra because that takes years, but it is tantric based. So you are going to learn about the tantric philosophy on love and sex, tantra and equality. You will learn about how orgasm is your direct connection to God, sexual bliss for men and women. We go over porn, vibrators, and other addictions, because yes, I do consider those addictions in our society. We go over extensive sexual anatomy, because sexual anatomy is actually one of my, I won't say gifts, but I do like it very much. And so I like to spread the word on all the yummy, juicy bits that we have, and that our body is designed for pleasure. An institutionalized religion and toxic society and culture has tried to shame people from their sexual pleasure, especially women, but also men, because there is a tangible connection between the heart and the genitals. And if you have ever heard the phrase, women use sex to get love and men use love to get sex, that is absolutely true. And so women have to pretend we don't feel things to have sexual experiences, especially with a man we like, but who's, you know, so not into us. And then men will, unfortunately, pretend to use love to get laid. And so this is toxic drama that we don't need in our life or our society at all. And so this is my way of trying to bring in healing for relationships. And so I'll be teaching extensive sexual anatomy, genital worship, how you can really get on it in there and worship on your partner's yummy bits. I will teach you how to shed your ego and how to start healing sexual trauma. We will talk about karmic entanglement and how to heal from that. And karmic entanglement will be dealing with infidelity, one-night stands, guilt, blame, shame, all of that. But we'll also go over tantric gods and goddesses. And you don't have to believe in that, but that is part of the tradition of tantra. And if you can at least, if you can hold on to the concept that gods and goddesses, all gods and goddesses, even quote-unquote God, but all gods and goddesses are anthropomorphization of source energy's energy, that they're just aspects, the way you have many aspects to you. And so the gods and goddesses, we'll go through them, the Mahavidya goddesses, et cetera, because they allow us to tap into that energy for healing or love or sensuality or fierceness, whatever we're feeling, you know. And this is especially true helpful for people who are kind of on that path to healing or recovery or coming out of their shell. You know, you may want to call on Kali if you're feeling you're like, I want to be pierced, you know. So we'll go through Kundalini awakening and Shakti, and we'll even get into some Sanskrit. I will teach you some basic Sanskrit so that you can do mantras and that kind of thing. But basically, it is a 6-month course. It is 18 live online classes, none of this pre-recorded stuff, and you can ask me questions every week, and I'm just so looking forward to helping as many people as possible to offer this certification program for people who really, really, really want to anchor love and consciousness into their sex and relationships.
Wow. This is you know, this is very energizing. Just listen to the way you talk about it and the things we get. So we're gonna talk more about too. I want to know about where this whole bit about bringing the every time I say something, it's gonna come out with some kind of double entendre. But it's just gonna be the way it is. Getting the foreskin out into the open or whatever. But first,
yes.
And people are messaging me. My friend Kyla saying, All right. I'm going to be listening to this again tomorrow. Okay. Yes, you will. She already knows. Thank you. Okay. But first, I'm going to stop just
That's
a
awesome.
Moment. You can stay in here with me. I have got a new sponsor this month, and it's a website called Daisy Bella, and it's daisy-bella is the website address. I'll be sharing that on all my social media. But Daisy Bella is a positive, spirited fashion created to inspire confidence in women of all shapes and sizes with positive, uplifting messages and images. Because they say we believe too often that we become what we see, and Daisy Bella is committed to transforming the world of fashion with positive messages, inspiring women from the outside in, while also giving back to local nonprofit girl and women organizations. Their values are inspiring, empowering, encouraging, uplifting, and paying it forward. And this is just a quick run through because this is the first night that they've been our sponsor, but I'm going to be sharing them all over my social media. They have these lovely T-shirts and hoodies with things like, if you can dream it, you can do it. Be your kind of beautiful, and every soul is perfect. I like that because they want women and girls to hear and see words and graphic that reinforce subtle and not so subtle good images. Because we see too many negative ones, we want to see good ones. So, I'll be sharing it. Daisy Bella, though, DAISY-BELLA. And when you make a purchase, 10% of the net profits donated to a Daisy Bella Women in Need program where they support local charities and send girls to summer camp and things like that. You can read more. And also, if you go to their website and you want to and you buy something, put in thank you to me, thank you 20, and they'll give all my listeners a 20% discount. Yay! That's pretty cool. All right. Speaking of who else has pretty cool
speaking
stuff.
Of who else has
I think I've given them enough time to come up with the idea of, yes, we're going to talk about foreskin and free the nipple.
Woo,
and vaginal
girl,
warriors.
Yeah.
Yes, baby. It's about time. It's about time. Things were free. You know, why can't we just enjoy it and be free?
This is so funny. I agree because not even yesterday I got a message from Facebook saying that one of my pictures violated the community standards of Facebook, and so they were taking it down. This is a picture that I posted in 2013, and what it is a picture of it was a side-by-side, or actually it's a top and a bottom, of these two people who, a man and a woman, who have very similar build, like they're both very, very lean, like athletic lean, and she's very flat-chested, nothing wrong with that. And so he's laying back on the bed, arms outstretched, and then it's a picture of her laying back on a bed, arms outstretched. They all look almost identical, but because her nipples are female nipples, Facebook has said that the picture is obscene and violates their community standards. But his nipples are just fine, even though we have the same anatomical structure on both a man's body and my body. Mine's just bigger, you know. I have a lot more fat tissue, but we have exactly the same anatomical structure. Men have milk ducts, just like we do. Not quack, quack. You know what I'm saying? You know, but we have the same body. But a woman's nipples are considered obscene and violate all kinds of morality police, and, you know, women have, you know, getting their fainting couches and their smelling salts and all that jazz. But men can walk around topless at the gym, on the public street, jogging on the beach, and it's totally fine. So to have this happen even just yesterday from a picture back in 2013, which, by the way, they already did that back in 2013, like, but they didn't actually take it down, so they're finding it again. So
I think
it's ludicrous.
When you
said
2013,
anyway,
you posted it, and they're just now getting around to finding it and making a deal about it. I don't know.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm like,
every,
they have nothing else to do?
No. Every year, and I'm sure that's done in other cities, but for a while I was living in Asheville, North Carolina, and every August they have a topless rally. I don't know if you've been to that or if you're familiar with that there. Yeah.
Every summer. God, I love Asheville. I finally got to go. Oh, yum. Well, you know, and the thing is, though, is that Facebook and Instagram, which is also owned by Facebook, they choke all of my foreskin posts, all of my Intactivist posts. So this is just another day in the life for me on Facebook. So it's just, you know, okay, what are they getting all uppity about now?
I like how it's going. I was just looking on Google where I put in Asheville topless march. They have things that the headlines are Asheville topless rally moving to more visible site. Topless women set to return. Go topless Asheville. Women set to go topless. Asheville go topless rally happens. And yeah, and before you ask if I did it, no, I did not, because, you know, it's the South, and you know how sweaty it is in the South. I am not going to have my little fur things out there. No, I'm not going to let these things out there sweating in for putty. I still have all my bucket list
those little
for less, but no. But March is
Oh, God, I want to do burlesque.
Really?
But, well, I mean, I kind of have, but it's, you know, musical theater. Oh, yeah, no, but I want to do a true, legit musical theater-based, just, really awesome, classy routine. I would love, in fact, one of my videos from my album is going to be kind of based in kind of the burlesque kind. Oh, yeah, oh, that's awesome. Like, that's just a great empowering thing to do. Like having some boudoir photography done for yourself, you know, to do a burlesque number. Yeah. Oh, and by the way, did you know that New York City has made it legal for women to be topless in public?
Oh, has it? Okay. Well, you know, I always find it funny when people talk about how good it is to breastfeed, and then they freak out when a woman or somebody else leaves. Somebody's a lady because they're breastfeeding a child in public. It's like, my gosh.
And breastfeeding in public is protected in all 50 states. So don't let anyone tell you that you have to go to a bathroom where people do you cuss on your show? Because that's just kind of how I roll. But I won't say. But to go into the bathroom and that just the idea of a child having to smell urine and feces while they're eating, that's disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
So women, please know, breastfeeding exactly. I mean, do you want to go eat your dinner at a restaurant in the bathroom where people go to the bathroom? I mean, where it stinks? No, but watching a child be made to do that. Yeah, but see, but people don't think, well, we can't have that. Actually, yes, you can, because this is legally protected in all 50 states and Washington, D.C. So don't be afraid to breastfeed in public.
Okay, well, I don't have anyone to breastfeed right now, but I probably will later tonight. But anyway.
Wait, aren't you married? I mean, come on.
Yes, exactly. I'm saying later tonight, but not right now. Yeah. So, anyway.
See, don't
yes,
see.
Yes, thank you. You got,
when you
thank
have a
you
partner, you can do
that.
That's see,
Okay. So, back, I think I've teased the foreskin enough. Okay, I've seen the hashtags, foreskins matter. Let's talk about it. What about this? You know, I cringe whenever I've read a story about, a circumcision going wrong.
So I'm sorry, you're breaking up. I didn't hear that last part.
Okay,
can you rephrase that? Because I couldn't hear part of that.
Okay. Okay. I said I cringe when I hear a story about foreskin, about a circumcision gone wrong, something, you know, bad goes wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Why do people still do it?
Well, first of all, oh, my God, that's a big thing. First of all, every circumcision is wrong. There is not one circumcision that goes right. So when you hear about a circumcision being botched, that's when the doctor really screwed up. So every circumcision is wrong because the foreskin is designed to protect the male's penis, the glands, which is the tip of the penis, in different ways, in different phases of his life. For instance, when a boy is born, the foreskin is fused to the glands via the synechia. The same way your fingernail is fused to your fingertip via a synechia type of tissue. And so as a boy gets older, it starts to retract. Never, ever, ever retract a boy's foreskin. Don't let a doctor move the foreskin. It is fused on purpose. The only person who has the right to manipulate the boy's foreskin is the boy himself, because it's his body and he owns it. So nobody else gets to do that but him. Then as he gets older and the foreskin is retractable, the foreskin has other protective features for the glands, keeping debris out of from getting up into the urethra. And then there are so many incredible nerve bundles in the frenulum, which is on the other underside of the tip of the glands. It's actually what holds the foreskin to the glands. And then there's the ridge band. So these are the two most sensitive parts of a man's body. Then they get removed during foreskin. So most men do not, in this country anyway, do not know what they are missing. Quite literally, they do not know. Whatever the best sex they think they've had, they don't even have a clue, because the two most sensitive and highly innervated parts of their body, the ridge band and the frenulum, are removed during circumcision. And so then there are all sorts of issues with the keratinization. That's the hardening of the top of the neck and shoulders. It's actually called that, the neck and the shoulders and the neck and then the head of the penis. And that's why the circumcised men, their penis tends to be dry and cracked. They'll grow like 10 to 12 layers of keratin. You have keratin in your fingernails and your hair, and so they will grow 10 to 12 layers of that, trying to create a protective covering for the penis, especially the glands of the penis, because it is an internal structure. If you ever get to see, and you can see this on my website, if you ever get to see an intact man's glands, it ranges regardless of what the skin color of the man is. The glands color, it ranges from pink to kind of a purpley, chocolatey pink if he's maybe African American or so, but it's always pink and a purpley color because it's an internal organ. It is designed to be within foreskin. That's why every boy is born with it. It's why every male and every species of mammal, all 5,614 species of mammals, all males are born with some kind of protective covering on their foreskin. And so when you're 18 and you want to cut it off, that's your business because that's your body. But one of the things that I try to do as an intactivist is to bring awareness to the human rights of the child, regardless, especially, and this is where I get in trouble a lot, regardless of the personal cultural influence of the parent or the religion of the parent. Because it doesn't matter what your religion is, your religious beliefs do not extend to forcing them onto other people, not even your child. And so I get called all sorts of names, but ultimately I'm just trying to protect the human rights of the child. Because as a feminist, this is one of the ways I came to intactivism, was because I demand certain rights of body autonomy and self-determination for myself. And I don't let anybody infringe on that. But how does a newborn speak up and say, hey, don't do this to me, except through their crying and their screaming? And if you've never heard what a circumcision sounds like, you can find some on YouTube. There's a wonderful documentary called The Elephant in the Hospital. And there's a new documentary, and I'm writing a book called Intact, Men as They Were Born to Be, because my perspective, I am pro-foreskin. So I educate people on what foreskin is so that they see, oh, we shouldn't cut this off. This isn't mine. This isn't mine to cut off. And, oh, it actually has over 16 functions. Yeah, so, sorry. Again, blabbermouth, you know, but it's, oh, it's
but
just,
this
yeah,
is
it's
all
one of my,
useful
it's one
information.
Of, I think so.
I have no idea.
I had no idea that many parts about the what really happens when the foreskin's removed, and the other, as you was with the frenulum and the other things you were describing, that sounds like mutilation.
Yes. It is. But the interesting thing is that when we do this to girls, when we circumcise girls in this world, it's called female genital mutilation, FGM. Mm-hmm. And that is illegal in the United States since 1997. It was enacted in 96 and went into effect in 97. And it was recently declared unconstitutional by the big case up in Detroit. But it's still on the books. And so women, girls are protected. And in fact, in 2013, President Obama signed a new law that prohibits parents from taking American girls outside of the country and to the Middle East or Africa to have the procedure done there because it's illegal here. So Obama, thankfully, passed the law, or mm-hmm. by executive decision, I think, wrote it into existence that you cannot take your child out of the country to have it done either because they're still an American citizen. You know, and this is illegal for mm-hmm. But the thing is that why, if we protect girls, why don't we protect boys? And here again, mm-hmm. this is where I'm going to upset some people. We have made this illegal for girls because we're not afraid to piss off Muslims. It's okay. We can piss off Muslims. I mean, we don't care because we don't like Muslims in this country, you know, xenophobia. Mm-hmm. But people are afraid to outlaw circumcision on boys because they're afraid of being labeled anti-Semitic. And they're afraid of, oh, well, I'm going to upset people who are Jewish. You know, it's like, well, there are other cultures that do this. It's not just Jewish people. But that is the overriding reason why we're afraid to tackle boys' mutilation that we call by the word circumcision. And it, to answer your question that you asked like 14 hours ago, the reason is not only because we're afraid to tackle the religious and cultural aspects of it, but because circumcision is a huge financial boon. It is a huge money-making industry for the hospitals and the cosmetic labs and the biotech labs and all these other research labs and academic labs that buy the foreskins because they sell them and resell them, or they create, they take out, they extract stem cells and they create other products with them, or they create cosmetics and you go and put, you know, some mutilated foreskin all over your face or whatever. And there is money involved. There is so much money involved, and the boy never sees a penny of it. I mean, at least if you're going to take his foreskin, pay him for it, right? Because Dr. Paul Tenari figured it up and figured out that each foreskin is worth ultimately about $100,000 once all the money has changed hands.
Ooh.
Yeah. And the thing is what's happening now is that as intactivism is working and the circumcision rate is down to like 55%. It was 90% in the 70s, but as we've gotten down to 55%, now what's happening is that the CDC is going after intact teens and intact men, trying to convince them to get circumcised. The CDC now has a kind of an official federal policy for doctors to encourage intact teens and boys to get circumcised. And I think it's because somewhere along the way, somebody realized, wait a minute, it's only $500 to circumcise a baby. But when you start circumcising a boy or a teenage boy or an adult man, they actually have to be put under. They have to be under a general anesthesia to do that. And it's actually a very involved procedure. And it's like, oh, wait, that's a hell of a lot more money to be made off circumcising adults and teenage guys. And in fact, in China, there is now a policy where they are encouraging it, guys in university around Beijing. They started in Beijing, and now they're kind of taking it around the entire country of China, which has over 1 billion people, to convince these young guys at university level, these 18 to 21-year-olds, to get circumcised. And it's the myth of it's cleaner, it's not, that it prevents HIV. No, it doesn't. And first times, Robert Van Hau is an incredible pediatrician who has written several studies on this. I could go into this, but I don't know how long your show is. But it's, ultimately, it's a human rights issue. The only person who has a right to make a decision about a boy's or a male's foreskin is the male himself.
Yes. Well, girl, that's a, you know, there's so much I didn't know, and there's so much more for us to learn. This is really wow. I don't know what to say. This has been like overwhelming, and yet at the same time, how important this is. And it's not even right. It is.
Yes.
It's important. It matters. Of course, it makes sense that people make money off of it in America. So who would want to stop that?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yes.
Exactly.
So we are absolutely out of time, and they're about to cut us off. But I want to say, please, please, please come back sometime. Thank you for being here.
Oh my gosh,
for being
yes.
so generous
yes,
with your
yes,
time.
Yes. Thank
Please
you, thank
do.
You,
Maybe
thank
we'll
you.
Do a live show somewhere in person. But I'm going to close out with How Appropriate. This is my song, and I think the title you'll appreciate. It's Everybody's Got to Swing.
Oh, thank you, Miss Pauly. I'm going to share it.